Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back once again to the Fantasy Foot Beer Podcast. I'm James Kemp, joined, as always, by my good friend and fierce fantasy rival, Dr. Stu. Stu, what's up?
Hey, my man. Well, I am doing very well. Thank you for asking. I don't think you really didn't ask, but you said what's up. And you know what? What's up is
That's
I'm good. I am well. It's Tuesday again, everybody. Fantasy Foot Beer on Tuesdays. Why did we pick Tuesdays? Nobody cares. Looking forward to it. We're starting a new division tonight. We are talking about the AFC East. Lots of relevant stuff here. So if you made it through the bottom tier of the AFC North, now we get to talk about the cream of the crop. The NFL MVP is going to be coming up in this episode. James, first, how are you doing?
I'm doing really good. I don't have a lot to add. I'm feeling good. I've been dieting and exercising and haven't been drinking a lot of beer. So the beer that we are drinking tonight is very nice. It's very nice. I like beer a lot. I also like fantasy football a lot, which is what this podcast is about. So I think, seeing as we don't have any big news things to talk about, unless we wanted to do an impromptu, totally innocuous news segments, which at the moment I don't think we should do, let's get right into our rankings. As Stu said, we're talking Bills and Fins. Let's start with Buffalo, and let's go ahead and start with the most valuable player in the NFL in 2024, it was, Joshua Allen. Josh Allen, in a league of his own, I suppose, as far as physically gifted quarterbacks, or in a league of his own also with Lamar Jackson. I'm currently seeing Josh Allen as the QB1. A couple episodes ago, we talked about Lamar Jackson. I see the two as interchangeable. I think in that episode, I said I would take Lamar first. Stu, I think you said you'd take Josh Allen first. How about you talk about Josh Allen first?
We can talk about Josh Allen. Congratulations on his recent wedding. Amazing stuff. Haley Steinfeld. Love Pitch Steinfeld. Perfect. Pitch Perfect's a good movie. I don't care. Who knows it? I like that movie. Also, Anna Kendrick is in it, and Anna Kendrick is great. She's very funny. Anyway, Josh Allen, quarterback one. I'm totally fine taking quarterback one. It's just the price that you're going to pay. He's going overall in standard scoring formats as overall player number 27. So in the primary first half of round three, are you willing to pay for a steady quarterback week in, week out at that time? Yeah, probably. Do I want to? No, not really. I'd like to take maybe a running back and two wide receivers before that, but perfectly fine to do Josh Allen. You're going to be happy. You're going to get MVP or near MVP production. It doesn't matter where he plays. He plays in the snow and he does well. He runs well. He throws well. He's just a prospect, though a questionable prospect, that just hit it big, and now everybody's trying to make their own Josh Allen. Looking at you, Anthony Richardson. Cough, cough. Mm-hmm. I don't have a whole lot to say. How much do you say about a guy that is in the physical prime of his life, and he's producing at a high level and has been for literal years? You know, there's just not much to say. Pick him for your fantasy teams and have a good time.
I mean, really, the only thing there is to say is not about him, it's about strategy. And everybody has to decide their own team construction strategy on their own. We'll probably do an episode later on where we'll break down the different strategies you could approach this season with. But I'm also seeing Josh Allen going in the third round. That's very rich to be taking a quarterback that early. It's not the richest we've ever seen. There have been years when Patrick Mahomes was going in the second. In the olden days, before there was so much information about fantasy football out there, so much data out there, quarterbacks went in the first regularly. So the third comparatively is not that bad, but still, what are you giving up to get Josh Allen? Something for you guys to think about on your own. I don't think the value of the quarterback is a question. It's just team composition. And if he goes down for any reason, there's still Mitch Trubisky to think about. If you want that nice little quarterback handcuff. But I do wonder, my dear Stu, how we can look at Josh Allen as the QB1 with his supporting cast of receivers being what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Khalil Shakir, wide receiver 38. Keon Coleman, wide receiver 51. Further down the list, who's who of has-beens, I guess, or never showed ups. Joshua Palmer, Elijah Moore, Curtis Samuel. None of those guys draftable. But it's weird that we have all of these quarterbacks who are so good and so highly ranked for fantasy football, Joe Burrow notwithstanding, with none of them having like a bona fide wide receiver one. What's up with that? What do you make of it?
Well, he hasn't had an elite option. I mean, he had Amari Cooper last year, and Amari Cooper's a very good wide receiver. He's not elite. He hasn't had an elite option since Stephon Diggs. The difference between the quarterbacks that can and the quarterbacks that can't is they just make do with what they have. His supporting cast is not all that changed from last year. Yes, Amari Cooper's gone. Elijah Moore is now in there. Joshua Palmer is now in there. But I fully expect him to do it again. Not only can he go to the running backs out of the backfield, he's got Ty Johnson, James Cook are both good receivers out of the backfield. Keon Coleman had flashes. Khalil Shakir was actually a very nice surprise last year. Joshua Palmer, I always thought he was going to put it together in Los Angeles. Maybe he can do it here. But he's also got his tight ends. You know, Dawson Knox is a fun target for him, getting about four targets a game. And then Dalton Kincaid, we've been waiting, hoping for him to break out because all the pieces are there for him to have an extraordinary season out of our tight end slots. But Josh Allen, just he does it in spite of what is around him. He can just do it himself. He can throw it to anyone. He can run it for himself. He's huge. He's hard to tackle. He's got a strong arm. Everything is just working for him. You know, people on other teams, quarterbacks on other teams that even have better options than him, they just don't have it. They're just not. They're not him. If you want to use a Gen Z sort of slang, he is him. You know, James.
He is Josh Allen. Oh, that was weird.
That was a stretch.
I did not like that. Okay. What I was kind of trying to poke into existence there, Khalil Shakir is going as the wide receiver 38 right now. That's for PPR. That's going in the eighth round. Stu, what's he doing in standard?
So Shakir is down there at wide receiver 43, 106 overall in standards.
Yeah, how can the number one wide receiver, and I don't think that's a stretch to say Khalil Shakir is going to lead that receiving core. If he's going as the wide receiver 38 in the eighth round, oh my God. The top quarterback in the league with the wide receiver one from his team going in the eighth round, sign me up. Let's go. That's an incredible depth pick who you're going to get onto your team as probably your first or second bench slot, possibly as a flex, who is going to have massive upside. He's most likely going to get a good amount of volume, a lot of looks. I don't see any way that people don't pick up on that. But right now, let's go.
Mm-hmm. If you draft several months too early, this is the time.
We're in the middle of dynasty draft season.
It's true. Like, that is true.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Keon Coleman, also there.
Second year wide receiver. You have a little more trust in people like that. It takes him a while to get going. And it took Keon Coleman a while to get going. Hey, you know who's there too is LaVisca Chenault. Remember when he was going? He was going in like, what, the fifth or the sixth round some 3 years ago? Anyway, doesn't matter. I think the only knock against Khalil Shakir, Keon Coleman, is that you're never really sure. You said the volume is going to be there, and it is, but it's not going to be to the degree of, like, DK Metcalf in Pittsburgh, who we just spoke about last episode. The opportunity for Josh Allen to spread the ball to Cook, Johnson, Shakir, Coleman, Palmer, Moore, Samuel, Knox, Kincaid, that's what, 8, 9 guys that all have reasonable pedigrees and abilities to catch a football. So there's inherent risk there, but I am still with you, James. I'm on the Khalil Shakir bandwagon right now. I'd be happy to have him on my rosters.
Absolutely. Want to talk running backs?
I do. It's going to be confusing. It really is. I mean, James Cook, if you're paying attention to the news, there's rumblings that he's not happy with how he's being paid. James and I talked about it. We have kind of decided we're not get really concerned about that. There's probably not a huge risk of a holdout for James Cook. And, you know, moving past that, last season, 207 carries, which is, you know, not that many carries for someone who's the lead back in a backfield, just over 1,000 yards, and he was very much buoyed by the fact that he scored 16 times. Right now in PPR, he's going as the running back 12, James. Are we thinking some negative regression to the mean a little bit? Is this too pricey for James Cook? And should we settle our expectations just a touch?
So I'm seeing on my end RB15. Should we level our expectations? I think at 12, yeah, we should pump the brakes a little bit. 15, I know that's not a big difference, but that feels a lot more palatable to me. Now, thinking guys who might also be going in that same range, we are looking at, say, Alvin Kamara, Kyren Williams, Kenneth Walker, Joe Mixon. There's a few names that I would probably like above him, but at the same time, there's question marks with those guys too. And nobody outside of, like, maybe the top 10-ish, maybe less than that, are gonna feel like home run picks. At this point, you're taking an RB2 anyway, with RB1 upside and really RB1 expectations. So, if you take him that early, well, one, that's the only way you're gonna get him. I don't see him falling. You have to believe in the guy. You got to believe in the offense. You got to believe in his skill set. You got to believe in the way that you think he's going to be used. And do I believe in the way I think he's going to be used? I'm not that intimidated by Ray Davis. I'm not that intimidated by Ty Johnson. I am intimidated by Josh Allen's ability and desire to tuck it and run himself. But, I mean, I think James Cook is going to get his in goal line situations. Josh Allen very much will too, but that's a very high-scoring offense that is going to score on the ground a good amount. So I'm not super concerned. I'm pretty willing to pay what he's asking. That might be a double entendre, both for fantasy football and for the Bills front office, mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
So, yeah. You said not very intimidated about Ray Davis. Ray Davis, for his part, does hold his own when he gets double-digit carries. He's averaging some, like, high fours, low fives in yards per touch. So, is he reasonably capable of picking up the slack if James Cook is holding out, ineffective, hurt? Sure. Should Ray Davis be rostered? Honestly, probably. A kind of a deep handcuff bench option, but you want ties to the best offenses in the NFL. So as far as handcuffs go, someone on like the Ravens, the Buffalo Bills, you know, these top flight offenses that are going to score a bunch of times, you want those guys on your bench first over someone that's like handcuffing Jonathan Taylor. Anyway, do I crap on the Colts too much? I think I crap on the Colts too much. Anyway,
I don't think you crap on the Colts enough.
Ty Johnson, passing down specialist, is what he is. Not going to be competing for super meaningful touches, but he's going to be annoying enough to frustrate some people in some game threads online while they're monitoring their fantasy teams, James. Now, we talked about the wide receivers. Let's talk about the tight ends. Dawson Knox, Dalton Kincaid. Okay. I don't think either of them are going to be or should be drafted as a starting tight end in week one. Streaming targets, perhaps more so Kincaid, in my opinion, than Knox. But do you feel strongly about either of them at all or have any hope for them? I mean, Kincaid disappointed last year. He was being taken as a very exciting young prospect for tight ends, and he super disappointed to the tune of 44 receptions for 448 yards and only two scores. James, what's going on with that?
So, hot take. There's only one tight end I'm excited about in this year's class, and we're going to talk him about. We're going to talk about him today, and it's not Dalton Kincaid. There's a little spoiler for future in the episode.
Are you excited for Jonnu Smith?
We'll get to it. But Dalton Kincaid, tight end 13, what I'm seeing right now, very much in the streaming category. I think what's going to happen with him is he's going to have one game early in the season where he gets probably not going to hit 100 yards, but he might get a touchdown and get somewhere in the 15 to 20 point range, and people buy up all of their fab or drop someone important to pick him up off waivers, and he's going to get a very high ownership rate very early in the season, and we're going to see a little bit more of the same. Now, is the potential there for him to be a really good tight end? Yes, but the potential is also there for there not really to be any impressive tight ends this year. That's really not fair. You got Brock Bowers, George Kittle out there. But Dalton Kincaid, not someone to get overly excited about. I'm currently seeing him going in the 12th round as a dart throw. I'm not throwing my dart at a tight end 13. I'm not taking a second tight end, usually. So, you know, not exciting really much at all.
No, not particularly. You know, tight ends are what they are. So that's all that they will be. And they're going to fill a slot in our lineups, and that's about it. Place kicker Tyler Bass has been a reasonably good option, plays for a great offense, but this is an offense that scores touchdowns. This is not an offense that gets stopped in the red zone or on the opponent's half of the field too often. So he's not exactly, you know, a top flight option, but if you want to keep your ties to these great offenses, I'm okay with it, you know.
I like Tyler Bass.
I know you do. You've owned him in the past. And he's going to kicker 18, so it doesn't seem like a lot of people agree with you. But
I think he's got a nice boot on him, but, you know, he's a kicker.
Kickers aren't people.
Well, probably so, true.
Somewhere that is cold. Let's go south, shall we? We'll go into the hot, steamy humidity of Miami. And we're going to talk about the Miami Dolphins, James.
Bienvenido a Miami. All right. The Miami Dolphins. A lot of fun stuff to talk about here. Ooh, taking our pick. Stu, is it too soon for you to start off the Dolphins with Devon Achane?
You know, I think we could talk about Devon Achane. He's going to be a little bit easier of a conversation. I'm excited for the tougher conversations of the wide receivers and quarterbacks. And apparently
I
the tight ends.
I do, of course, say, is it too soon for Devon Achane, knowing how your season went last year, having traded for him?
Okay.
Would you like to get something off of your chest here?
Context, people. Hey. You're the one listening to me. I want to give you context. My history as a fantasy football player, you know, it's nothing but helpful. Last year was a struggle for me. I thought I drafted very, very well, but the biggest hole, the last thing that I filled on my roster was my RB2 slot. I thought that Jaylen Warren was going to be a lot better than he was. We already talked about Jaylen Warren last time. We're not going to rehash anything. So I thought to myself, you know what? Let's shore up my RB2 slot. I ended up flipping Ja'Marr Chase. Ja'Marr Chase, who had not yet signed his record-breaking deal, who was being double-covered every single game I watched, did not have T. Higgins on the field. I thought to myself, this is an incredible player, but I think I can leverage him to be something that fills my needs. And I will go to my grave defending this trade. But traded Ja'Marr Chase straight up for Garrett Wilson, Devon Achane. Both of those players were RB1s and wide receiver 1s the rest of the way. Of course, Chase was the wide receiver 1. If there is a win-win in a trade, I think that trade was a win-win for myself and the other manager. I don't regret it for even a half second. And I have no qualms about talking about Devon Achane because, you know, he had some injuries, of course, last year, but he did well for me. He was not the reason my team was bad. My team was bad for some other reason, some unquantifiable malarkey that made everybody score their best weeks against me. I think two or three of the managers had their best weeks against me. Devon Achane is running back 1. Now, he is not my preferred RB1. There are several others I would take over him, but I'm seeing him in standard scoring as RB9. He's probably higher in PPR. I mean, the guy had some 78 receptions on 87 targets last year, and 6 scores through the air. He's a passing specialist, great in PPR leagues. I would be happy to have him as my RB1. Right now in standard, he's going as RB9, and I think that's a perfectly reasonable spot for him. He's just around Kyren Williams, Josh Jacobs, and Christian McCaffrey. So I think he's in his proper spot. I think he's worth paying up for, but there's some question marks, of course, and we don't like question marks for our first round and second round picks, the question marks surrounding the health of Tua Tagovailoa. So, James, talk about Achane, and let's get to the more meaty stuff with the Miami Dolphins.
Before I talk about Achane, Stu, I give you crap about that trade. It's mostly because of how your team ended up, but I think anybody listening to this who was familiar with how the season ended up last year would absolutely agree that despite the fact that you gave up the wide receiver 1, that's a savvy trade. That there's a lot of intelligence that goes into that, and I think you kind of flexed your muscles on how good you are at this. But it didn't work out.
Going into these drafts, I really wish I could keep Ja'Marr Chase, but I can't. So I'm probably going to end up with Jahmyr Gibbs. And you know what? That's cool with me, too. Anyway.
But anyway, Devon Achane, I'm seeing him in the PPR world at, brace yourself, RB5. That is above Christian McCaffrey, Derrick Henry, and below Ashton Jeanty. Okay. Which, you know what? For what he is, I think RB5 makes sense. I think I would spend that capital on Devon Achane. I think he's got that high of a ceiling, and I am not really anywhere near as concerned about the health of Tua Tagovailoa as a lot of other people are. I'm not really that concerned about the state of the franchise in Miami as a lot of other people are. So while we're on that topic, let's go ahead and talk about Tua. We all know what happened to him last year with his concussions, with people calling for him to retire for his own safety. That seemed a little excessive in my mind. But Tua, despite his many injuries and setbacks, is a good football player, is a good quarterback, and he has a good offense, a good head coach, a good wide receiver room, a good running back stable. I don't see any reason why he is right now listed as the QB 21. That's pretty excessively low in my mind. Yeah, there's lingering injury questions, but like, he's got Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, Jonnu Smith, Devon Achane. I could go on. He isn't throwing ducks. I think that Tua Tagovailoa is going to rise when injury concerns go away. And I think that the guys last year who disappointed, mainly looking at you, Tyreek Hill, have a great opportunity for a bounce back here. Stu, what are your thoughts?
I am learning a lot about you, James, and how you view the Miami team, because I mean, we don't talk about these things beforehand too much, so this is very, very organic conversation that we're having. I just don't feel the same way. I did not think it was excessive for people to, you know, seriously talk to him about retiring. I didn't think it was very excessive. I mean, his good friend, it was Teo, right? Manti Te'o got on, you know, national television and basically begged the man to retire for his own health and safety. I didn't think that was that excessive. And this is baked into his ADP. He can go down. It's one erroneous scramble, one time leading with his head, and it could... I don't even know. I don't even know what it could do to him. It hasn't already been done. Like, everybody knows the history, and it's scary stuff. It's terrible that it is part of the game, though it is unavoidable in the game. But if he goes down, I mean, we're looking at Zach Wilson leading the Miami Dolphins. You know, that risk is baked into the NFL at large, but I would consider more in Tua Tagovailoa. So, QB 21 may be a little bit low, depending on the weapons around him. I'm going to throw out some skepticism around some of the targets that he has in here in a little bit, but I don't know. Streaming category, he's not a set and forget QB 1. He's not going to be drafted as a QB 1. I think he's decent where he is, if maybe one or two slots too low. So, moving past Tua, you talked about Tyreek Hill. We got to talk about him and Jalen Waddle. I don't know. If we put a list together of the most disappointing wide receivers last year, maybe top five, are these two guys on it, James?
I mean, absolutely. As a guy who, you know, we talked about your trade. Let's talk about mine. I traded for Tyreek Hill pretty early in the season, thinking that the early season slump could not possibly continue, and it did. Tyreek Hill definitely on that top five. Jalen Waddle, if he's not on it, he's very close to it. Chris Olave is number one, I think.
That's fair. Completely fair.
Yeah. But Tyreek Hill, this is a guy I'm going to struggle with. I'm seeing him as the wide receiver 15 in PPR, and somehow in the mock drafts, I'm seeing he's going early third, late second. I know where the upside is. The upside is in his incredible speed, unmatched speed, and he can burn anybody, and Tua can hit him. So what happened? Was it starting, what they start 0-5, 1-6, something like that? And the team kind of looked like it gave up before the season even started. I think that was a huge factor in it. And, you know, do you want a guy who's so negatively affected by that sort of situation? Tyreek Hill's an incredible athlete. He is getting up there a little bit in age. You know, he's not that old, but we're talking about football here. I think he has an absolute ability to overperform where he is right now. Stu, where is he in standard?
Wide receiver 15 in standard.
Okay, so going exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
Taking him as the wide receiver 15, I don't feel bad about. I think having the history of what he did last year is going to feel frustrating, and having the history of what wide receivers of his age and that drop-off tend to look like is going to be frustrating also. But also, there's the potential and the history in more favorable situations playing into it. I feel like I logically have to give him the benefit of the doubt there. Especially considering some of the other names that are going in that range. He just feels like a more higher leverage option. Stu, what do you think?
You know, I don't think it's too insane to have him as a wide receiver too, even after last season. There may be, you know, two, three, four guys that I would take personally over him that I'm seeing on these ADP charts. It's just, I worry so much. It was bad last year. Their whole season was just lost when Tua went down pretty early on in the season, and they were throwing out, you know, like Tyler Huntley and whatnot. It puts a damper on the entire season, and I just think there's more risk that it happens for Tyreek Hill personally again. I mean, you're right, he's not old, but he's 31, and speed is like the first thing to go when you get a bit older, and he doesn't look that fast. As I mean, he's not Tyreek Hill of 5 years ago, and he's not an incredible route runner. He doesn't run these crisp routes that is going to get him separation. He always relied on his speed, and if his speed is going downhill, that is not something that I want on my fantasy roster. That is not where I want to get burned. You know, defenses, we want to get burned. I don't want to get burned. I think I'm going to do a lot to not have to take Tyreek Hill a lot this season. But I'm not completely out on him, I suppose. I'm not excited. Jaylen Waddle, though, I might be completely out. James, I might be completely out on a guy who's 26, who had 58 receptions last year, 744 yards, 2 touchdowns. I mean, towards the end of the season, he's not even... They had two games with 5 or more targets. After... Actually, he had 5 or more targets like 4 times, 3 times in the last half of the season, last 6, 7, 8 games. That's not it. That's not a good... a reliable option. That's not a flex option. That's like Khalil Shakir range, but without the upside. James, how do you feel about Mr. Waddle?
Now, I feel like it's hard to look at this Dolphins team and judge them by what they did last year. I know we have to, but I think there's something to be said about the football side of this and over the fantasy football side of this. And that is that football is an incredibly emotional game. And if there is something to shake your team emotionally, it's extremely hard to come back from that. And as we've been saying for this entire segment here, the Dolphins were not the same team when Tua went down. They took a few haymakers early in the season, and they never really got off the mat. I don't think that is going to be what this team is. I haven't looked at what their early season schedule is. It might be like Eagles 4 times in a row. I don't know. But Jaylen Waddle is a guy who I think is extremely talented. I think could compete for the wide receiver 1 spot in this offense. And currently seeing him go as a wide receiver 3, a low-end flex, a early bench stash, is not doing service to who this guy is. Now, having him go in the 6th round, which is where I'm seeing him on mine in PPR. I'm not sure where he's going in standard right now, Stu. But I think this reflects who he is as a player, less so what the situation is. Mm-hmm. I'm not taking Jaylen Waddle in the sixth. I'm not touching him in the sixth. I honestly, even though he's 10 spots down the list, I would take a long look at Khalil Shakir before I took Jaylen Waddle. And I really like Jaylen Waddle as a player. But do we draft on potential? Do we draft on past? It just depends on your perspective.
Mm-hmm. To answer your question, they actually opened the season very softly. We got Indy, New England, then a rough one on Thursday night at Buffalo, then New York, Carolina. So first 5 weeks, reasonably manageable for the Miami Dolphins. So can we talk about Jonnu? What's up with Jonnu? I've been waiting this entire time.
Okay. Let's talk about Jonnu. So, Jonnu Smith currently going as the tight end 8. Jonnu Smith last year kind of blew up. He finished the season, I believe, as the tight end 4. He had in the last stretch of the season from week 11 on, 28 points, 2 touchdowns, 23 points, a touchdown, 20 points, 113 yards, 10 receptions, 13 points, week 15, 19 points, week 16, 12 points, 11 and 17 to finish out the season. Some of that was Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle giving up. Some of that was Jonnu Smith. I mean, I did watch a good amount of Dolphins football down the stretch. He looked like LeBron James out there. And that's crazy to say, but it seemed like when everybody else had kind of given up on that season, Jonnu Smith was the one guy who never did. And I have incredible respect for that, and I think that the coaching staff has to have incredible respect for that. I think Tua has to have incredible respect for that. And I think having that kind of option at a position that is pretty lame right now, pretty shallow, seeing him going late in the draft, I want as much Jonnu Smith in rounds 9 and 10 as I can. And that is who I want as my tight end 1 in the way that I want to build my teams. I'm not going to reach for Brock Bowers if I know that I can wait and get a guy who has the potential to ball out like that with an offense that underachieved last year but has such, in my mind, an incredible ceiling that they can get to. I don't think Mike McDaniel's dumb. I think that he was handed a really bad hand last year, and I think he's going to make it happen, and I think Jonnu Smith's going to be an important part of it. That's my standing on the table for Jonnu Smith.
Wow. This is the most passion I've heard out of either of us for a tight end. I'm just going to leave it be, man. I'm not going to try to hack you down. Jonnu Smith all the way. Good for him. For me, he's like one of the last tight ends that I would set and forget, basically. Or set and, you know, check every week, wait until it gets bad, and then replace them. Like, he's not a streaming option. He's a tight end 1. In standard, he's going TE7, tight end 7. So just above Travis Kelce. We'll talk about him eventually. But, I mean, if he's getting all of his opportunities in a lost season at the end when everyone is checked out, when the Hills and the Waddles are checked out, when the Achans are getting hurt a little bit towards the end of the season, I mean, are we expecting an increase from what he was at that time when now that it's a fresh season, everyone's healthy, everyone's hopefully motivated? At least logically speaking, that doesn't track for me super well. But again, I said I wasn't going to hack you down, James. So we're going to be on the Jonnu Smith hype train all the way. We've got kickers. Jason Sanders plays in good weather. He's coming in at like kicker 11 for standards. Not that standard to PPR means any different for kickers. So he's going to be one of the last selections of your drafts probably. And that's pretty much where he'll stay and deserves to be.
Okay, hold on. This is a wild observation. How? Okay, so I look at PPR rankings. Stu looks at standard rankings. How, for you, is Jason Sanders higher than he is for me? I've got him as kicker 13.
I've got him as 11. And I just pulled up an updated kick or a PPR, and he's at kicker 11 as well. What
is he? That doesn't even make any sense. Are there kickers who are expected to receive passes at some point during the season?
If that is the case, then you should be higher than I should be.
Well, not Jason Sanders. Like, people further down on the list who are expected. Anyway, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a clerical thing that makes no sense. Such is the nature of looking at fantasy football rankings at any time, let alone early June. But, well, I guess mid-June right now. He's a kicker.
He kicks balls.
He does indeed kick balls. You know, Stu, standing on the table for Jonnu Smith there, that made me awfully, awfully thirsty. And I do believe it is last call. Stu, what are you drinking?
Well, tonight I am drinking from Country Boy Brewing, the Orange Cream Cider. That is actually a little more ABV than I want at 10 p.m. on a Tuesday. It is 6.9. Nice. But I'm looking forward to drinking it. It's a tall boy. I'm going to have to power through it. I'm looking forward to it, James. What are you drinking to round out this evening?
I, this evening, am drinking yet another beer from Sturdy Shelter Brewing in Batavia, Illinois. This is a beer that I actually helped can this past week. I did not put the beer in the can myself. There's a machine that does that. I just helped box it and put it in places. This is the Pulped Up Middleweight New England Style Hazy IPA. They've got a few in this line of their Pulped Up IPA line. TKO is the higher ABV one, but I actually like the middleweight one better. It's a 6.6 ABV, which is no slouch. But I think it's got a really nice, refreshing quality to it. Some nice citrus flavors that aren't over the top with double IPA bitterness. It is a New England style IPA. So let's go ahead and crack those beers, everybody at home. If you got a beer, crack it in 3, 2, 1. Instantly flooding the hops into the nose. You know, IPAs get a lot of crap. I do like a good IPA.
I think they deserve all the crap that they get. But tell me why IPAs don't deserve all the crap that they get on our socials, X, Instagram. We take beer requests on Gmail at fantasyfootbeer@gmail.com. Please reach out to us. Talk to us. Tell us why Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle are not abject disappointments in the 2025 season and why Jonnu Smith is Jesus come again. James, round Johnny us out for this up. Evening.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you again for taking some time to listen to us talk about this silly little game we love. Thank you to Stu for spending this time this evening with me, drinking beer, talking ball. And I guess thank you to my dog for falling asleep again. He ran in midway through the episode with a shoe. It was Kelsey's shoe, and you may have heard some growling in the background. That was Kelsey trying to get the shoe from him. So thank you to Indy for giving up the shoe. And for all of us here at Fantasy Footbear, for Michael Stewart, I'm James Kemp. Good night and good talk.